Honey, I blew up the business.
Welcome to the podcast. We have Joe Dalton here today. Nice to see you.
Thank you for inviting me, and it's lovely to be here.
It is lovely to be here. We've got a real cracker today because Joe's a bit of a sparky character, let's just say. She's got a real CV. I'm going to very quickly overview it through it. What always happens is I read the people's CVs who come on here and I get a kind of sort of, you know, slightly paranoid about how good my one is. But she's an entrepreneur, an investor, a board advisor, a mentor, a judge of awards, and many, many other things. She's founder and CEO of JD & Co., who are the leading executive search, leadership coaching and advisory firm in the UK for startups, scale-ups and game changers.
Woohoo!
I like that line. And she works a lot in the tech industry, particularly, and with not just any old tech companies, tech unicorns and the like.
Absolutely.
So she's also an investor, and in numerous investors, but particularly in a platform called Alma Angels, which is on a mission to level the playing field for female entrepreneurs seeking early stage startup funding. A great mission. So she's involved with all these exciting companies, and she's been doing lots of exciting stuff herself. And I'm kind of very excited to speak to her. But before we kick off, I'm just going to remind you that this podcast is brought to you by the tech department, which is my company, which is the business that I blew up in 2017. And whilst we did manage to turn things around, it was pretty tough. I definitely don't want to be doing that again. So the whole point of this podcast and the whole reason we're talking to Joe today is to help you avoid the stuff I did that made me blow my business up. I'm trying to learn because frankly, I'm still building my business and I'm still trying to navigate that path. And if you like what we're doing here, please subscribe and share and like and post and get it on the socials and big us up to all your mates. Because the more you do that, the more we can help more people. And that's my mission through this. So please help. But without more further ado, we're going to jump in because I was doing some Google stalking of Joe, and she lives what seems through the internet very glamorous life. Is that right?
Oh, if only.
She's hanging out with tech CEOs. She's invested in stuff. She's into fashion. She's always looking very glamorous in her photos. But I know that. That wasn't always the case. And back in the day, I was interested about the time when you were sat with a can of tuna on your knee.
I can't believe you found that on the internet. Yes, I was. What a random thing to start with. I think that was the moment when I decided to set up on my own. I set up my previous startup with three other founders. Massive lesson. Please really get to know the people that you're going to set up a business with. Make sure your values align. Make sure your mission is the same. Make sure your ambition is the same. And sadly, it wasn't. So I decided to just walk away and not be defined by that big mistake. So I always talk about it as being sort of, you know, Jerry Maguire style. I just walked out with my goldfish and off I went to set up on my own. The early days were really dark. And yes, there was many a time. It was just me, my laptop, eating a can of tuna out of the tin, because that was the only thing. So I'd probably been working for about 18 hours straight.
The dinner of champions, I believe.
I think it was my birthday as well, which makes it doubly sad. So yeah, I was actually at home alone eating a can of tuna. It's just not a good look, but you know, I've moved on.
Well, no, it's a vivid image. I'm hopefully you had a candle in it. Maybe. So you've come out of a situation where you've made a mistake, say, with your founders, and there's been some kind of heat around that, and you've walked out and you've set up. And this was JD & Co. that you'd set up.
So it was actually the previous business, JD & Co. And It's really interesting when clients are actually asking you why you are working with those founders, and you're looking at some of the business decisions that are being made, and you just feel really disconnected from the person that you come to work to be and who you actually are as a human. And I was really disconnected. I came out of the corporate world, had a horrendous time there, you know, trying to wear the suit and play the games in the boardroom and play the internal politics. And then went into, three of us left when that business was sold and we set up, and I just wasn't being my true self. And so it was really life affirming, and especially looking back, everybody around me thought I was completely bonkers. You know, I'm a single parent, I had no money behind me, I'd never set up a business on my own, I didn't have a huge amount of business acumen. So yeah, it was brave and stupid.
So, what were you thinking then at that point, when you in your brave, stupid moment?
I actually didn't have much of a plan. I wrote one page out on a piece of A4 and just started. I just thought it sounds so super cheesy, but I wanted to do three things after not being myself and my authentic self in the workplace, and trying to be something that I wasn't. I thought, I wonder if I can just work with clients that I really love. And I chose consumer tech because I'm a geek. I wanted to work with the apps that I used on my phone myself, the services that I used, the products that I used. I wanted to work on projects that get me out of bed in the morning. I'm getting old. It's hard to get out of bed. So I wanted to work on projects that interested and inspired me and intellectually challenged me. And I just wanted to work with really good people. You know, when I don't know if anybody's done this, back in the corporate world, when we were doing business travel, 24 hours before the tickets were released for the flight that you were all going on, everybody scurried off into a corner and purposely booked their seat away from their colleagues.
No, I've never done that.
And so it was just so lovely thing. I actually want to work with colleagues that I want to sit next to on an 8-hour flight and that I'm going to really enjoy spending time with. And so that's always my bar when I'm interviewing somebody to work with me. You know, some people use the beer test, but like you can have a beer with a lot of people, but can you actually sit on a flight for 8 hours and still enjoy being with them at the end of that flight and then go and work together and go and see a client or go to a conference? So for me, that's always the litmus test.
Yeah, it's a good litmus test, actually, because, yeah, you're quite right. If you can't sort of sit and easily hang out with somebody in a cramped environment, then, I mean, frankly, working with them is going to be challenging. So, all right, so you've kind of had this lot of almost visceral reaction to... You're disconnected. You're in the corporate situation. You weren't feeling it because you were all this kind of political stuff going on. You're in your first startup and you're not feeling it because you're disconnected from who you truly are. And you've kind of burst out of that office and with your proverbial fish tank, and you're out with your brave/stupid decision and you against the world. And you said it was kind of really dark early days. Well, what made it dark?
I think it was just realizing all the gaps that I had in my knowledge and my experience. And, you know, like everybody else, major imposter syndrome, you know, is everybody I've ever worked with and ever encountered looking at me right now and what I'm trying to do. And I love I love geeking out. I love technology. I love the startup and scale-up space. And my previous co-founders aspired to work with big corporates because it was safer. We could get repeat business. Whereas startups, they didn't really understand. And I naturally permeated towards them. I loved the ambiguity and strap in for this ride. We're like, it's a rocket ship. We're going on this big journey, and there's going to be lows and highs and lows. And I was doing exactly the same myself. And I was also trying to change the headhunting industry at the same time. You know, it's got a terrible reputation. You know, we're akin to bankers and estate agents. Sorry, bankers and estate agents. But it was a bit of an old boys club. Everybody moved their mates round the boards of all of the companies in London. And I just wanted to do something different and sort of blow it up a bit. So it's a bit scary because I didn't know if what I was doing even made sense. But thankfully, 10 years on, it worked out.
Okay, so you said you wanted to get into the industry and blow it up a bit. What does that mean?
Well, the recruitment industry is all about sales and commission. And for me, that just drove the wrong behavior. And that's the reason that I think I was unhappy in the corporate world. Not only was I trying to act like the people that I saw around me, that, you know, all had the big jingly jangly watches and the shiny suits, and you know, their confidence and their ego walks in the room 5 minutes before they do. That was the sort of general MO. And I was thinking, well, I want to be really consultative. I don't want commission to be anywhere in the equation. I just want to give great advice to clients, and whoever they take, I want that to be what's right for the business. So I just did away with commission and did away with sales. So 10 years, I haven't spent any money on marketing, nobody's ever made a business development call, and none of the consultants work on commission. They're all paid as if they were in-house. So it was scary because I had no templates to steal from my previous employers, like most people do. No salary schemes, no job specs. I was working with disruptive tech companies that were changing the way we all operate today while disrupting and changing my industry at the same time, which I don't recommend. It was bloody hard.
Yes, a double complexity.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, I'm attracted like a moth to the flame to that kind of stuff, by the way, because I'm continuously like trying to do things differently in a difficult market or industry. And I think there's something kind of, well, I find like I kind of enjoy that game, but it is kind of, it's tough. And again, so coming back, this is a bit where you're launching yourself into this complex, fast-changing, dynamic world of tech and tech startups at a time when tech is exploding, and I guess it still is, but really it's just all beginning to happen 10 years ago. And you're trying to at the same time do it completely differently with arguably an unproven model, perhaps.
Yeah, usually unproven. Nobody else is doing it.
So everyone's going left and you decide to go right, as it were. And so kind of like, was there a moment where you were thinking, I'm going to mess this up? Or like, you know, like early on when you're in that path, you know, you said it was kind of, it can be a bit scary. What was there a moment there how are you feeling in that first year as you were finding your feet?
Yeah, if you think about the landscape, Instagram had 14 employees and had just got Series A. So, you know, little old street roundabout, you know, it was Mind Candy. It was Moo had just started out. It was a bit dodgy still. But I felt like I had no alternative, and that if I had turned right when everybody else had turned left and it was the wrong thing, that I would just probably do something completely different, because I couldn't carry on in the industry and the profession that I'd chosen doing it the way everybody else was doing it. So I think that's probably what got me through, was just thinking, I'm going to try doing this differently. And if it doesn't work, I'll retrain. I'll do something completely different.
So you were kind of, you just rejected that other way of doing things. You were just, I'm not doing that. So it's almost like a kind of, like you knew what you didn't want to do.
I knew what I didn't want to do. What was really interesting is that looking back, I think I changed everything. And at the beginning, I remember talking to one of the first clients and everything was so different. And they said, because how typically the industry works is that you get a percentage of, say you're hiring a CEO, you get a percentage of their first year's remuneration. And everything was fixed and transparent and everything else. And the CFO came along and I remember them saying, well, can you just work out your fees as a percentage? I was like, okay. And then they signed. So they weren't quite ready for me to be as totally disruptive as I was at the beginning. They wanted me to have notes of the industry so that they could compare and they had something familiar to sign. So I think that's interesting, because I look at all of the early adopter scale-ups that I work with now and I see that some of them just didn't fail for no other reason, that they just started too soon and people weren't quite ready.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, innovation is great, but you've got to get everybody else to agree that it's great.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah, and so you kind of, so there's some practical things in the mix there too, like in terms of trying to do things differently and shake things up. But so, and on this subject of imposter syndrome, again, this comes up quite often, and like as a concept, a theme. Could you give us an example where you felt that, perhaps in those early years, and it was an example where you had to sort of overcome that fear or kind of, you know, really sort of confront that issue?
I think there have been two big moments where it has really bashed me on the head and almost paralyzed me, you know, physically and mentally, because when it has really hit me those two times, I actually felt my legs really go to jelly and I couldn't actually get up from the table. So it had a physical manifestation as well as a mental one. I think the first moment, I think, was going along to my first tech conference. And sadly, back in the day, it really was big time bro culture. I don't like beer. So it was really tough because I'm standing there in, you know, 99% male environment talking about the future of tech. And it was really tough just because I, you know, I still thought, oh, have I made the right decision moving into the tech sector? And I think the second time I started investing a few years ago. And I just thought, I'm so passionate about female founders and about businesses that have a sustainable mission, you know, look at the state of the planet, that I'm just going to put my money where my mouth is and start investing in some of those businesses that I really believe in. But actually describing myself as an investor, I still really struggle with, because again, there's, if you close your eyes, there's an image of what an investor is meant to look like. And I didn't feel like I looked like that person.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's fair. And it's definitely 10 years ago, tech bro thing. It was funny. I had some developers who would, we in my team, and there was a kind of, I forget the name of it. There was a slang word for them, but they were like drinking protein shakes, wearing tight t-shirts, they wanted to code on Ruby on Rails because that was the trendy platform. It was like a whole thing. Like, and it was this lifestyle that they all got into. And that was very much was the thing. And it was like, you know, parties and beer and what have you. And so you've turned right into the left, as it were, in terms of the industry. You've gone into this other industry, which is kind of you're the 1% of the 99% young men drinking heavily. And so what did you learn, perhaps looking back? So you've got, you're applying these lessons through investing, but looking back at that time, and then perhaps even just for other, whether it's a woman or other people who are perhaps a minority in their industry, what have you learned about navigating through where you feel like the only person there or feel like a bit of a sort of an odd one out sort of thing?
I think obviously all the years of hindsight, it's all of the positive feedback about how useful or valuable or insightful your expertise is, and you've got something to add to the conversation. So I think having that recognition now is really important. But I think looking back at the time, at that moment, if you find yourself in that situation, just be confident that your unique, weird self is actually enough, and you can definitely contribute.
Yeah, that's good advice. And I think, yeah, this is something that I think everyone feels a level of imposter syndrome for what it's worth. And I feel it all the time. In fact, funnily enough, on this, I joked about this at the start of this conversation about people's CVs and me feeling like not as good. I had a chap I interviewed last week who said the same thing, and his CV is unbelievable. I mean, it's like the leading in the world number one guy awarded. And he's like, oh yeah, Dan, I listened to your podcast and everyone's so much better than me. I'm like, what? So it's really funny. Like, I think everyone projects, and particularly on social media, like projects that everybody else is confident I've got it sorted. But I think, you know, everyone's kind of muddling their way through and feels like a weirdo, right? Whether they are or not. So I think this idea of connecting to who you really are that you started off with, and how you, because you'd had that misconnection and that lack of authenticity in your first startup, drove you to set up your current business. Could you perhaps speak on that? Like, just on that particularly, people who might feel they're a bit disconnected and not having the courage to perhaps get to their authenticity?
I just wish, I wish people could just, you know, borrow my head sometimes and look at, in 10 years, we've probably put over 350 of the boards and leaders into all of the biggest and brightest tech startups and scale-ups around. And every founder I meet still is, however much they've gone through two successful exits, they're a serial entrepreneur. Once you really get to understand them and work with them over time, you realize they're just like you. And so I think that's, I wish I could give everybody the benefit of all of the meetings that I've had. And obviously for a living, I look at people's CVs all the time, and whatever anybody's done and what qualifications they've got, it's people always hire on chemistry, values, you as a person. So, you know, don't be intimidated.
Yeah. So it's working with those. I'm kind of curious to see what's your, you're working with people who are at the top of their game in their, you know, the tech sector, who've got these kind of big headline exits behind them, and they're, you know, feted in the industry. So what's it really like working with those people? You know, when you kind of, you know, it's like working with the top talent in sport, maybe. What's the sort of insight that you've learned from working with those kind of people that you've applied to yourself, or you think is a good lesson?
The biggest learning for me, I'm so privileged, so lucky, because I'm working, as you say, with the top talent in the world. And so I just make like a sponge every day and soak it all up. But I think working iteratively and constantly making decisions. I remember working with one founder, and it was right, okay, we've got this, we've got that moment where we've got to make a really big decision. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. We make it. And if it's the wrong decision, we make another decision at 2:30 that afternoon to unpick the bad mess of a decision we made at 10 a.m. that morning, but keep making decisions, keep iterating, constantly moving the dial. And I think the other thing that I see in founders that I work with, the very best ones, and that I've tried to adopt in my own way of working, is being super self-aware, really, really knowing yourself intimately and all of your weaknesses, and then hiring around you. If you imagine, it's like I always have this image of like a really, one of those annoying wobbly tables that you get when you're trying to eat at a restaurant and it just won't go away. And to get the balance right, you've got to bolster up your own skill set with the things. Quick story for you. When I first, few years into the business, I realized that things like corporation tax, P&L budgets, all those sorts of things weren't where I got my energy from. I was like, I need to hire a finance director. And so I met three or four people, just drained my energy, and they were absolutely great at what they did. Then I got a recommendation. I used my network, and I met this guy who used to be a pantomime dame for 20 years. One of the funniest humans I've ever met. We laughed all the way through the interview, and he's been my FD ever since. And so I would say, if you've got something that's like your Achilles heel, whether it's numbers or it's public speaking or it's marketing, whatever it is, if it doesn't give you energy, find somebody to do it. Definitely bolster up your skills, but also get somebody that, I'm excited for my finance meetings now. And that would have been just ridiculous thought before I found the perfect person to work with me.
Yeah, that's amazing. It, funnily enough, again, for what it's worth, we've just got a new accountant for my business in the last year, and we have a kind of quarterly meeting with them. And the first one I was dreading, because again, I'm a bit like you, I don't get my energy from the finance. But these guys have just got a real good energy, and the woman that leads it, I've asked her to come on the podcast because she's so good fun. But it's like, again, accountancy and fun are just two things you don't think together to put together. And I think it's part of, again, well, I am very much led by stuff like that. I like to kind of have a nice time at work. You know, we're kind of here for you know, a long time. So we're with good people. All right. So you're working with all these amazing people. How does one become more self-aware? If that's a really important thing for a founder or a leader in a business to be, how do you do that?
Oh gosh, lots of navel gazing. I'm a lone founder, so imagine Dragon's Den. I spend a lot of time talking to that wall. You know, I have that wall, and I speak to it often. I get loads of feedback from friends. You know, find your tribe, your gang, your network, whatever you want to call them, and make sure they're really brutally honest. I always get feedback from, I love hiring graduates. Somebody's got to, you know, the UK is letting graduates down. And so I think they're always really good to give you really brutal feedback.
That's good. Yeah, I mean, I guess, and how do you sort of, do you have a sort of structure for that, or you just sort of welcome it when it arises?
I think the most constructive feedback comes with early tenure employees, because they've got a fresh lens on the business, and they're always really good at giving really constructive feedback. I also really enjoy mentoring a few people, and I find that the mentorship that I give them, I actually take spoons and spoons of that medicine myself. And so I think that's a really good way to do it as well. Cross-generational, always looking at, I think if you're getting feedback from people that are just like you, it's going to it's not necessarily going to be that helpful.
Yeah, that's a good shout. Yeah, and the other thing I'm curious about, we've talked a lot about high growth companies and your role in helping them and then the founders and how they kind of cope with that. You mentioned your website that you also work with people when they're scaling down. And as the theme of this podcast is about things blowing up, and this is an experience I had to go through back in 2017 of letting people go. How does one, perhaps some of your clients or even yourself, how do you deal with things when things are going wrong, particularly with people, the people around you? How do you kind of navigate that?
I people always laugh that I live in black, and so there's a bit of the Grim Reaper, because it isn't all hiring and scaling. Sometimes it's firing and closing down, and it's really tough. But sometimes founders set up as I did all those years ago, and they haven't really had they haven't spent the time investing in that partnership. And so a lot of the time I'm advising on exiting a co-founder. Sometimes you bring somebody in, and especially back in the day, he was doing all of the web development for the new startup, and he was sleeping on my sofa, and so I just made him co-founder. Right, but that isn't the person that is going to take you to your big shiny exit. And I think it's tough sometimes, but you have to look at some of those relationships, and they do have sell-by dates. And there are moments where I'm always saying, are you hiring this person all the way, to the Caribbean? That's why I always talk to my team. We're going to the Caribbean. We're going to have loads of fun on the way. You can go off at any time, but, I'm heading to the Caribbean. It's going to be a fun ride. So I'm saying to founders, are you hiring somebody that you just need this particular bit of expertise for the next 18 months? Or actually, do you need them for the next 5 years? And I think that's important. And some people just aren't going to make it. They're great as an individual contributor, but are they actually going to be a talent magnet to hire you, as the CTO, to hire 100 engineers and product folk to get you to Series C? The answer a lot of the time is no. So you're going to have to replace them.
All right. So often the times the scaling down things or taking people out of the equation has a root much earlier on in the process.
Yeah, it's about mishiring. Hire slow, fire fast you've got to spend enough time really getting to know the people. But sometimes there was a situation really early on. There's only been one founder where Series A landed, and back in the day, you used to get this millions of cash, and the investors would say, right, go and meet the founders now and then help them set out their plan for the next couple of years. And 9 times out of 10 I'd look at them and they didn't really have a plan, but we'd sort of figure it out as we went along. But there was this one time where the founder had got Series A, and we hired a bunch of people. It was a really exciting moment. And they went off to get Series B. They actually went to Asia Pac to do it and came back and faked a term sheet. So they didn't actually have the next round of funding approved. But I think it was just because they wanted it so much, they couldn't not come back. And in the end, they whistle blew the business. Unfortunately, went pop, and it was a disaster, and loads of people lost their jobs. But it was just a really interesting learning for me, just seeing somebody that so desperately wanted it so much that they actually faked it.
So, what was the learning from that
God. Well, one of the phrases I hate now is fake it till you make it, or, you know, it's all about hustle. I think there's a place for that. But I think that in this day and age, I think being culturally aware, we've all seen, you know, when I watched the Fyre Festival Netflix, you know, the latest ones are all out there at the moment, the blood analysis business. You've got to have depth of experience and expertise, and you really have got to have some weight behind your claims. We're just not in that world. The world right now is too transparent, and cancel culture will grab you and bite you on the bottom if you haven't got substance and conviction and real data and, well, whatever it is, the product needs to work.
Yeah, it's interesting. It comes back to that authenticity thing again. It's like, if you're acting out something that's not real, and trying to fake that, and you know that in your heart, your conscience will tell you that, but if you still think you can sustain it, then it's a fool's errand. I mean, apart from the fact you're going to get called out and cancelled or whatever that would happen, it's stressful for yourself living a lie.
Yeah. I still see it sometimes. There's lots of VC money in Europe at the moment, as we know, lots of heady valuations and lots of fundraising going on at the moment. But I think we're going to see that people are going to have to work really, really hard to get that next round of funding. It's an interesting time. I think we all need to buckle up.
Yes, indeed. Well, and as this podcast will help you do that, buckle up and get ready for bumps and scrapes. We're heading towards the end of our time together. And one question I always like to ask people, and I think it'd be really interesting to ask you, is what advice should entrepreneurs ignore? There's lots of advice out there, and we're all full of bloody, you know, hot takes. But what should people ignore?
Oh, gosh. I would say just start. I wouldn't spend too long with strategy and a business plan and everything else. You can start a side hustle. You can start quietly and then grow something. You don't need to have, you don't have to have planned it to the nth degree. And I think the other thing is just be careful. Everybody talks about your own personal brand. And I think that's important, but I've seen founders who have failed that have spent a lot of time building their own brand, going to the opening of an envelope, but actually not spending any time actually working on their own business. So, you know, I've taken the mole approach. I've sort of like burrowed under the earth and then popped up when I'd actually achieved something. So I wouldn't spend too much time announcing you're about to start. I would announce once you've started and achieved something.
Yeah, it's getting that rooting things in reality. I think that's it's one of the problems, I think, with particularly social media and even the concept of a personal brand, and that, what is that? And this idea that you have to be out there all the time, like you say, attending every opening and showing your face. And one of the things that lockdown taught me was how my entire career has been spent out doing stuff like that, you know, lunches, dinners, networking, pitches, meetings. I'm the guy that went out. And then lockdown hit and I couldn't do the thing I'd spent 20 years doing. I was just like this sort of bemused creature in a room, like at home, not knowing what to do. And then, you know, fast forward, I found that a very large percentage, I mean, 70% of what I was doing wasn't essential to the success of and the growth of the business. And it just, on that particular point that you're saying there, it's very tempting, again, to get the picture for Instagram or to show that you're out or to have this sort of external validation. And it feels very, all that activity feels very, what's the right word? Satisfying and productive because you're out. but then you're so easy to lose sight of what's important, what's essential.
Yeah, I think it's only at surface level. I think there's lots of talk and there's lots of I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that. And I think that spending time carving out routines and days where you actually do the things that you say you are going to do rather than spending days and weeks networking and be one of those gunners.
That's great. And I think that's your t-shirt that we're going to produce together. I'm gonna.
If it's my big one is, if it's not a hell yes, it's a no. That is my favorite, because when you're trying to hire somebody, when you're thinking about a big decision, take on more offices, take on more clients, whatever it is, if it's not hell yes, then it's a no, I'm afraid.
Well, we've got two t-shirts. Yeah, don't say I'm gonna, and if it's not a hell yes, it's a no. I like that very much. I think there's something in that. This you talked about, an emotional, the energy around things and around people. If the energy's not there, that's a signal. Yeah, and you maybe can't articulate what it is, but it's a signal. And I've personally learned to trust that, or the absence of energy around an issue.
Energy is so important. If I'm hiring somebody, if I'm hiring a board or the C-suite of a business, it's almost like a marriage. It's all about chemistry. It's hardly at all about their experience at that level.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah, it's funny that I'm trying to navigate my world by leaning on that more. Follow where the energy is, and it sort of flows much easier than trying to force it in through, you know, logic alone. But yeah, what a fantastic conversation. I've learned loads of stuff in here, and it's been super great. So thank you so much for being so open and generous. Where can people find you on the internet or online or wherever you are, social media?
I live a lot on LinkedIn, which you can find me easily, and Instagram. And yeah, just old school. Drop me a message. I'm always open to feedback and meeting interesting people.
Very good.
And well, share battle scars.
Well, we love a bit of battle scar sharing on this podcast. And check out Jo's Instagram, because she does a great thing on a Sunday where she shares what she's been reading, like a book club thing. And I'm kind of I was liking that. I like to read a lot, so check it out. I'll put all the links in the show notes, and please say thank you very much through the ether, everybody here, and we'll see you all next time. Nice to see you, Jo.
Thank you for having me.
Do you want to get the top 5 tidbits from each episode emailed to your inbox every Friday? Yes, you do. It saves you having to go through and make notes and make a note of all the books and all the ideas that are in the podcast. We go through and we choose the top 5 we like, plus put all the links into that email. So if you just go up to honeyibluewupthebusiness.com, yes, that's honeyibluewupthebusiness.com, and just enter your email address. There's a little box, just enter it in, and we will send you that information. And it saves you having to make notes and all that. That's make your life a bit easier. And of course, if you did enjoy the episode, please consider subscribing. We are trying to help people through this. So the more people that subscribe, review, rate on Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify, the more people will see it and the more we can help. So help us help other people, other entrepreneurs like you. And before I go, I've got to say big up to my company, the tech department, the company we blew up and put back together again. They're generously supporting me on this mission through the podcast. So if you guys want to have a look at a company that can really help you improve your technology, make it better so your business gets better too, boosting your sales and your profit and a bit more sanity in your life, a little less stress, then head up to thetechdept.com, the tech department. My company, give us a look. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.